Good afternoon in Europe and good morning to North America and maybe good night to Tokyo, whatever. We welcome you to today's analyst conference call for K+S Group third quarter results. In recent weeks and months, our shares received an increased interest from the capital markets. There are three main reasons from our point of view for this. First, the takeover bid of the mining group BHP Billiton for Potash Corp, which reminded market participants of the long-term attractiveness of the potash market. Secondly, the surge in wheat and other agricultural commodity prices, which led to a recent tightness in potash markets, and the thus announced price increases. And last but not least, the continuous and attractive earnings contributions right from the start of Molten Salt, underscored by the well-balanced strategy of potash and salt. During the next hour, we plan to proceed as usual. Mr. Steiner, our CEO of the K+S Group, will comment on the results achieved as well as on the current and future market environment. Then, executive board members Mr. Steiner, Mr. Felker, and Mr. Nonnenkamp will be happy to answer your questions. I'm now pleased to hand over to Mr. Steiner, our CEO.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our Q3 conference call also from my side. I am very pleased to report that after a successful spring season, we saw an almost normalized demand for the autumn season too. Furthermore, salt markets were in a good shape in Q3 and contributed well to revenues and earnings. These facts, as you know, legally obliged us to pre-announce key figures ad hoc last week. So let's now take a closer look at the Q3 market trends now, and I will flip to slide number two directly. The fertilizer business sector. The third quarter of 2010 was characterized by higher normalizing demand for fertilizers. As said, potash fertilizers ordered in the summer months by the trade sector in the northern hemisphere were used by farmers for autumn fertilizing at the almost normal level again. A relatively high level of capacity utilization at most potash producers and significantly declining stocks led to price announcements from competitors for the Asian markets of $420 per ton for granulated potash. Brazilian market prices were announced between $410 and $420 per ton of granulated potash, and in mid-September, we announced the price increase by 12 euro to 317 euro per ton, once again for granular potash in Europe, which is therefore very similar to overseas level. The positive trend in demand for straight nitrogen and complex fertilizers also persisted, and prices rose significantly against the backdrop of higher input costs. Salt. European tenders for the icing salt were predominantly concluded by tangibly higher prices after the persistent wintry weather conditions at the start of the year. European production facilities operated at full capacity in the third quarter. In the United States, we saw moderate price declines at lower contract volumes due to still relatively high stocks as a result of the previous mild winter in some regions and increased competitive pressure on the East Coast. The consumption of water softening salts in the area of industrial salt was still lower because of difficult economic environment in North America. As for salt for chemical use, demand in Europe and South America normalized thanks to an economic recovery, which was not yet the case in the North American market. Slide three. The market environment as described led to the following group results. Overall, third quarter revenues were up by 52% to 1.1 billion euro. EBIT 1 increased more than tenfold, although from a low base due to the high contribution of the potash and magnesium business segment and the earnings contributions from the salt business segment, the latter benefiting also from consolidation effects. On the earnings before income tax level, we saw the influence of a weaker financial result in Q3. The financial result amounted to a negative 53 million euro compared to 12 million euro in the same period last year. This was due to higher acquisition-related interest expenses, as well as a non-cash one-off interest expense of 23 million euro for provisions for mining obligations as a result of a necessary reduction of our discount factors. Earnings per share developed favorably too and stood at €0.21 versus a negative €0.01 in the third quarter of 2009. Please note that the average number of shares amounted to 191.4 million shares compared to 165 million shares last year. Summing up, the first three successful quarters of the reporting year, we achieved revenue growth by 45%, going hand in hand with a significant increase in EBIT1 by 160%, as well as a very positive development of our free cash flow. Slide number four, a more detailed look at the changes in K+S Group's revenues during the last quarter. Revenues increased by around €360 million. This was mainly caused by positive volume, structure, and consolidation effects. Positive exchange rate effects more or less balanced negative price effects. On the next slide, the segment development in the last quarter. Potash and magnesium products revenues rose by 23% to €418 million, resulting from an increased volume demand. Due to fixed cost regression, EBIT1 increased by 47% and amounted to €79.4 million. The US dollar, which in the third quarter continued to be stronger in comparison to the previous year, also had a positive effect on earnings. Nitrogen fertilizer revenues rose by 50% to €306 million. Operating earnings in the segment reached €2.6 million in Q3 after a negative €47 million in the same quarter last year. The business segment profited from higher sales volumes as well as from a tangible increase in fertilizer prices in all product groups. The salt business once again, but now for the last time, saw strong consolidation effects. Revenues were up by €184 million, of which Morton Salt contributed around €160 million. The third quarter operating earnings amounted to €31.8 million, but we will have a closer look at the different factors on the salt business later in this presentation. Although not decisive on the group level, but to complement the picture, complementary businesses revenues increased slightly to €32 million. EBIT1 was unchanged compared to the same period last year. Now, I would like to turn to the Q3 developments and future trends in the potash and magnesium business segment, slide number 7. As always, the following table should only be understood as providing a rough indication of how prices have developed. Factors like freight cost, exchange rates, and product mix usually distort this picture. Year on year, we saw a strong increase in sales volumes. The recovery was even stronger in Europe, because sales volumes had dropped more drastically than in overseas markets in the same quarter last year. Average European prices decreased less than the overseas price as reductions in potash prices were mitigated by positive product mix effects. Average overseas prices, on the other hand, declined on lower MOP prices compared to the previous year, as well as negative product mix effects. Quarter on quarter, European volumes were lower due to seasonal effects in the third quarter. Overseas volumes decreased somewhat due to logistical reasons. The European average price was favored by price increases, whereas the overseas average price noted in US dollar was moderately lower than in Q2. This was mainly due to negative product mix effects. Overall, the average price for our product portfolio noted in euros was about €266 per ton. Now I would like to provide you with more detail about our view on the perspectives of the potash business, and I would like to turn to slide number 8. As the price development for agricultural products has turned out not to be driven only by short-term speculation, and farmers began to change from a savings mode into a yield maximization mode in order to lock in the very attractive product profit potential, we have upgraded our outlook for 2010 as well as the medium-term outlook. In 2010, global potash sales volume forecast ranges between 52 and 53 million tons compared to our previous estimate of 50 million tons. For 2011, we expect worldwide potash sales volumes to range between 55 and 60 million tons. Previously, we had 53 to 57 million tons. Please note that our outlook is usually approximately 2 million tons higher than those given by competitors, as we include SOP and other low-grade potash specialties. Starting from the described sales volume level in 2011, long-term growth rates are expected at 3 to 5% per annum again. This would result in utilization levels of about 85% annually until 2014. This is again a good level, especially if you consider the risk that announced new capacities could be postponed or even cancelled due to technological, geological challenges or due to an inadequate price level. The industry's production forecast is now fully dependent on the timely fulfillment of brownfield projects. I would now like to briefly discuss our demand forecast for 2010 and for 2011 by regions. Slide number 9. And our upgraded forecast for 2010 is mainly based on a strong and higher than expected volume recovery in Western Europe, North America and Asia. While these markets had to suffer most last year, they are expected to show the strongest recovery. For 2011, we assume demand increases in all regions, in particular in Western and Central Europe, as well as in Asia. So now it is time to turn to salt. Slide number 11. In Q3, salt volumes increased significantly year on year due to the consolidation of Morton Salt. Without Morton Salt, volumes in the icing salt would have increased by 14%, whereas other crystallized salt volumes would have decreased by 4%. Prices for the icing salt were higher than in Q3 09 due to positive product mix effects within North America and higher prices carrying over from the European winter season. Furthermore, the US dollar-euro exchange rate continues to have a positive effect. Overall, prices increased by 18% year on year. The prices of the remaining product groups improved significantly after the inclusion of Morton Salt. Quarter on quarter, the icing salt sales, the icing salt volumes followed the normal seasonal pattern and were significantly higher than in Q2. Prices for the icing salt decreased a bit compared to Q2 due to slightly lower pricing in North American markets because of the past mild winter season. Now I would like to take a closer look at the historic and recent volume and price development of the salt business, and therefore please turn to slide number 12. This graph highlights that due to external growth, namely the acquisitions of the Chilean SPL in 2006 and of Morton Salt in 2009, salt's sales volumes have increased significantly over the past years, while keeping the de-icing salt share rather stable at 50 to 60%. In addition, it shows that the price level for the icing salt has been tending upwards over the past years, a trend that might pause in 2010. With 22 million tons, we have lifted our outlook for the salt business segment in our expectation for the end of 2010 to the upper end of our original sales volume forecast of 21 to 22 million tons. 13 million tons out of this will be the icing salt. In our outlook for 2011, we assume sales volumes of 21 million again, based on the long-term average of historical de-icing salt volumes. 12 million out of this might be de-icing salt. On the next slide, you see that our quarterly sales volumes and prices are certainly affected by the seasonality of the de-icing salt business. Combined Q2 and Q3 de-icing salt sales volumes sometimes even account for only 10% of the total sales volumes over the year. Prices generally tend to be somewhat lower in the off-season quarters Q2 and Q3. The acquisition of Morton Salt has led to a strong volume increase, but also the strong winter in Europe led the de-icing salt sales volumes increase in Q1 compared to the previous year. The seasonality has a significant impact on quarterly profit contributions, with Q1 and Q4 being helped by higher volume output compared to the benefits of fixed cost regression. Nevertheless, the EBITDA margin of our salt business segment is developing very satisfactorily, as can be seen on the following slide. That shows that even in a mild winter, Morton Salt is capable of achieving an attractive EBITDA margin of 23%. This is remarkable, as the former salt business of the KWS Group achieved indeed the same EBITDA margin, but on the back of an above-average de-icing salt business. With Morton Salt, KWS's salt business is therefore much better positioned to mitigate the former risk of volatile de-icing results. This brings me now to our updated outlook statements for 2010 and 2011. Slide number 16, 2010. As already forecasted in our financial report for the year 2009 in our Q2 report, we expect a significant increase in revenues so that a result of between 4.8 to 5 billion euro after 3.6 billion in 2009 seems realistic from today's perspective. This is based on a specific sales volumes guidance between 6.7 and 6.9 million tons in the potash and magnesium product segment, and the assumption of a stable average price in the fourth quarter. In the salt business, there should be a consolidation effect of a good 600 million euro of revenues due to the first-time inclusion of Morton Salt for the whole year. A total, we have heard it, of about 22 million tons of salt products should be sold. 13 million tons out of this can be allotted to the de-icing salt, assuming the well-known average de-icing salt business in Q4 2010. This altogether should result in significantly higher group operating earnings of between 630 and 670 million euro compared to the 550 to 600 million euro previously forecasted and 238 million euro last year. A somewhat weaker financial result in comparison to the previous year due to non-recurrent effects and higher acquisition-related interest expenses and an overall adjusted group tax rate of 26 to 27% should also lead to significantly increased group earnings adjusted of 375 to 405 million euro or 1.95 to 2.10 euro per share. Finally, some initial indications for 2011. In the potash and magnesium products business segment, we expect to achieve a tangible rise in revenues going ahead with significant growth in operating earnings. This is based on a moderate increase in sales volumes to just over 7 million tons and, on the basis of international potash prices attained at the present time, a moderate rise in average prices. With regards to our volume guidance, we would like to highlight the following. Since our portfolio comprises a broad variety of specialties with different nutrient compositions, the maximum production capability depends on the envisaged product mix and formulas. As we want to further optimize our product portfolio going forward by ceasing production to lower margin products, our midterm capacity figure will reduce. For mining companies, usual and gradual decline in ore grades will lead to the decrease of our maximum production capacity from approximately 7.8 to approximately 7.5 million tons. For the year 2011, our forecast of slightly above 7 million tons is furthermore affected by the following two reasons. First, the recovery of the global potash markets came on the back of significantly higher grain prices earlier and to a higher degree than expected. Therefore, we are actively seeking to employ new miners in order to reach our maximum production capacity. This process will take time for hiring and training. Second, the start of the environmental program at the Werra sites will force us to adjust our existing production processes and will tie up our manpower to some degree. With view to that, we foresee, in addition to our usual 2 weeks maintenance shutdown period, one further week being necessary at the Werra plants. This brings me now to next year's outlook for the fertilizer nitrogen fertilizer business segment, which is expected to slightly increase revenues but tangibly grow operating earnings due to a moderate relief on the cost side. A somewhat lower average sales volume of crystallized salt of about 20 million tons, I mentioned it already, should lead to a moderate decrease in revenues in the salt business segment, based inter alia on higher freight costs as well as on personal expenses. Operating earnings will decline tangibly. Overall, and based on the assumption of continuing attractive agricultural prices, as well as an exchange rate of $1.40 per euro, the K+S Group should achieve a moderate increase in revenues and significantly higher operating earnings in EBIT1. Now, the forward-looking statements page is something that you are used to see, but that we are obliged to show you. So this brings me to the end of my presentation, and therefore, first of all, thank you for the interest so far. We, that means Joachim Felker, Jan-Peter Nonnenkamp, Christian Hermann, and myself, are now happy to take your questions. Thank you, and please start your questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and you wish to withdraw your question, please press 7 again. You will be advised when to ask your question. Your first question comes from the line of Martin Rödiger from Chevreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks. This is Martin Rödiger from Chevreux. Three questions. First, on the financial result. When you exclude the higher provisions for mining, it looks for me that there is another item which has also burdened the financial result. Can you elaborate on that, and in that connection, what is the normal quarterly run rate for financial result? Second question is on the new midterm capacity guidance. My understanding is that this is because of the change in product mix towards higher potash content. What is the impact on average selling price and average profitability by that? And third question is on Iran. My understanding is that you have also business to Iran, but currently a lot of companies in the industry are affected from the ban that no one should export to Iran. Is that also impacting you? Thanks.
So we would like to answer your questions, number one from Jan-Peter Nonnenkamp, and the second and third one will be done by Joachim Felker.
Okay, first question, you're rightly saying that our financial result is affected by this interest adjustment. That goes to the position of the mining obligations. The other position in our balance sheet, which you may have your question, are the pension provisions. And with the pension provisions, we don't have to adjust right now because we are using a corridor approach here. And as long as we are inside the corridor here, we don't have to adjust this. And in the next weeks and months, our external actuators will make calculations on our pension provisions as well. And the outcome will then be reflected, if there is an outcome, in the fourth quarter and in the year-end statements.
Okay.
Johan? Yeah, so to question number two, what is the guidance capacity-wise? As Norbert Steiner said already, we will have some changes in the product mix, and we have closed a small plant in France. That will bring down the total capacity we will have next year. Product mix means that we will have about 1% increase in K2O content, but we will then strip some other product lines like Thomas Carly and some powder mixes. So I would say it's about 250,000 tons. Iran, there is one business we have traditionally over, I would say, decades. It's an SOP business, which is going to the Iranian state. For the time being, it's silent. There is no demand for the time being. And if we will do it again, then, of course, we will follow all the regulations necessary, which basically is finding out a proper flag that needs a proper shipping company.
May I come back to the question on financial result? My understanding is that the pension provisions did not change, and the mining provisions have been a burden of additional 23 million. So when I, for example, add that to Q2 financial result, then there is still a gap to the Q3 financial results. Why is that the case?
Okay. Yeah, Martin, this is Christian speaking. The reason, the main reason for the financial result this year to be slightly higher than last year is twofold. Number one, the exceptional item what we had now in Q3 was the interest change. That's, I think, fully understood. And secondly, we more or less restructured our financing for this year, and this means that we have to absorb the fees we paid, and this is coming now through the P&L. Normally, they would have been distributed over the length of the lifetime of the original financing, and since we now restructured this, we have to show them once and for all this year. And the reason is also for the restructuring, that the new restructuring is lowering our average interest rate, not only for the volumes we are taking, we are drawing, but also for the volumes we are not drawing. And that's the reason why we did this year, and that means next year our financial result will reduce significantly.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Neil Tyler from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. A couple of questions, please. I just wanted to check on the impact of the adjusted potash production forecasts on the cost run rate. I mean, at the moment you're running at quarterly costs of between 340 and 350 million euros in per quarter in that business. Is there any indication that will alter significantly? Second question, just a small point of clarification. When you talk about the maintenance of current prices, are you referring to those prices, the price increases that you yourselves have recently announced, or are you referring to those that have been announced by competitors elsewhere in the world most recently? Thank you.
So Neil is, I think, I could very readily understand. So Neil, first of all, your first question, running costs of the potash production, I don't see that in the next year there will be any changes. Second one then was talking about prices.
One addition, sorry, Norbert Steiner here. There will be no changes connected with the reduction.
Once we have said that
we have low or lowest margin businesses, we have more or less decided to not to do that anymore. This is what Joachim mentioned, 250,000 tons of Thomas Kali and the shutdown of a small plant in France, which provided about 50,000-60,000 tons. So if you only had lowest margins, then we was turning a big wheel without any positive effect. Mm-hmm. So with view to that, there is no change, but a reduction of 300,000 tons of output.
Okay. And your question about future pricing, we base our forecast for the time being on the realized prices now, which we have now, and which we are still envisaging to have in the fourth quarter. When you see the announcement we have had over the last few months, then you always have to consider that we have about 6 weeks of orders in our order books, which means that the price we have in Germany and in Europe, 312 euros, will only be really affected in the fourth quarter. And we are not looking at pricing announcements of our competitors. We will see what we will do when time comes.
Thank you. I wonder if I could just ask for your view on what you have heard from, or particularly from Potash Corp, and on what your view is on the likely realizable level. When that would appear, if that is realized, when we see those prices resting in the market.
When you see what Potash Corp has announced, especially in the overseas markets, then we will have to see how the realization rates will be, because they have made some announcements already before, and there was quite some reluctance, especially from big clients in Brazil. What will also have an influence, definitely, what will be the pricing or the discussions outcome in China. And there are a lot of speculations how much the price increase will be, but there is, I think, no basis yet to really elaborate on that. It's too early.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Jean Waterville from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Oh, yes. Hi, good afternoon. Jean Delville from Nomura. Yeah, just again, question about the effect of the change of mix, please. I think if I understand correctly from the first question, the average grade of K2O would go up by 1%. So that means we would go from your previous guidance of 0.53 to 0.54. Is that the only change we should take into account of mix, or there are other elements? Because if I do calculate your cutting capacity by almost 4%, and that impact would increase sales by 2%, so that will still be theoretically a 2% negative impact on your potential sales. Any clarification here would be very helpful. Second question on costs, particularly on employees. I think you said that one of the reasons for a progressive ramp-up of production is that you need to increase, to rehire some employees. But in the same time, you have closed, or you plan to close some plants. Can you tell us what's your budget in terms of number of employees in the potash division next year? And then if I can ask a third question, that would be on Compo. I think the results in Q3 were I think you quoted the environment was quite competitive. So you can put a bit of color of what's the pricing and margin environment for Compo, and if you could share with us some year-to-date profitability numbers, that would be very useful given that you are potentially thinking of disposing this asset. Thank you very much.
Okay, Jean, this is Christian. I start with your first question. You are totally right in assessing this product mix effect. Number one effect is, as Mr. Felker pointed out, we are exactly seeing that if we alter our product mix, the average K2O content of all potash-based products will slightly increase from 53% to 54%. That's correct. But the effect that we see in particular next year with regards to the environmental program and with regards to the hiring of new miners is overcompensating that. That means you're right that the total net effect will be negative next year.
So I would like to add some remarks on the personnel. This is something which I assume is also the case when you look to other competitors of us. You have seen in the recent weeks that in some areas in the world there was a sudden scarcity that more or less is astonishing given the fact that we are not at 100%, let's say, theoretical capacity utilization. But it means that the people, that competitors obviously were not able to satisfy the demand that was jumping up from one day to the other in a short period of time. That goes together with the fact that in the year 2009, there was a lot of, in our case, short-time work. And but in parallel, we had people leaving the company by retirement, particularly. And since nobody, I think K+S is not very far away from that, what other companies did, was expecting such a year that we have seen so far in 2010, because we were very shy in hiring new personnel above that was on the payroll and did the short-time work, so that there is a negative gap for personnel that needs to be filled up in the year 2010 and 2011. And therefore, this is more or less the personnel effect out of that people and companies cannot come back to the utilization of the capacity so easily and so quickly like you may be expected.
Yeah, the last one then is the Compo question. So what we usually have in Q3 in nitrogen and especially in Compo is, of course, Q3 is always the lowest turnover month and the lowest quantity month, because there is not a strong demand especially for public area. What we also feel is that there is a shortage of funds in quite some municipalities. That means public greens and so on, they are a little bit neglected. And what we also see is that there is still a fierce competition in the
in, let's say, in these distribution chains like Tesco, like Obi's and what have you. So they give us very, very small margins when we supply them with product. And that's one of the, those are the major reasons why QC, the result of Compo, is rather dull, I would say. And that is also some part of the reason why we are looking to have a new owner for Compo. And you know how the status in this Compo is, that for the time being we are still busy with the carve-out, but we see that this will not take too much time, and then we will just go to the market and do our work and find out a new owner for Compo.
Are you losing money in Q3 on Compo?
No.
No, you're still positive?
No, we are positive, but not very much, because the business is very small.
Okay.
Q3 is very small. It will recover in Q4, because then specialties which go to, let's say, vegetable farms and stuff like this will increase again.
And can I just follow up on the employee question? Can you just quantify how many more employees are you recruiting?
I would say it will be a three-digit figure.
A three-digit figure?
A lower three-digit figure.
Right, very clear. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Sophie Jordia from Citi. Please go ahead.
Afternoon. I've got three questions as well, if I could. First of all, just on potash again. I wondered whether you could tell us what you're seeing in the way of demand in Europe at the moment. It seems that Europe has been one of the regions that hasn't picked up to the same extent as demand in other regions. I was wondering whether you could say what you're seeing, and if that's the case, when you would expect that to increase. That's the first question. Second question, just in terms of the mix. I mean, you talked about a negative product mix in the overseas market in the third quarter. Just wondered whether you could give a bit more color behind what was driving that and how, whether that is going to continue into the fourth quarter. And then finally, just on CapEx, I just wonder whether you could update us on the sort of expectations for CapEx for both this year, but more importantly, next year and 2012 in light of the environmental work you're doing as well. Thanks.
Okay, so I start with the first one, the business in Europe. So when you, I think you could see the presentation of Norad, and when you watch page number 9, you see that we show the consumption or sales figure for 2009 of roughly 2.7 million tons. And we estimate that this is coming back to 5.8 to 6 million tons in 2010, and then it will further recover to 6.3 to roughly 7.4 million tons. That means we come back to those, how should I say, quantities we have in a usual year in Europe. And that is what we always told you. We were suffering most in the Northern Hemisphere, especially we in Western Europe, but also in North America. But we also said that this will be the biggest potential to come back when things go normal again. So product mix, and why is has also to do with the pricing. Why is Q3 so special? What you could see in overseas, we have sold in Q3 less MOP and less SOP, which is driving the average prices down. But when you look at quantities, they are quite normal compared to other periods, because we were selling more kieserite types, which go into the palm oil industry. So that is always what we tell you. Have a look at the product mix and then see how average prices are influenced. And the third quarter was
CapEx. I would like to guide you, Norbert Steiner, again to slide to page number 24 in our Q3 report, where you find the figure forecast for 2010, which is about 200 million and an increase of about 100 to 300 million in total for the year 2011. Please keep in mind that we have announced already, I would say 2 years ago, our 360 million project to reduce the saline water outflow of our Werra plant. And there, most likely, if the authorization process runs well, and we have also the, let's say, the agreement with our political areas in Hesse and Thuringia, then we will have a big bunch out of that for that program. And three quarters out of that are more or less attributed to investment relating to replacement, and this is included there. That means that maybe this figure will be below the depreciation in 2011. But this is still a rough estimate. Experience shows that the longer the time goes, the smaller the figure gets.
Thank you. Can I just quickly just go back to the what you were saying on European demand? I was really wondering what you were seeing at the moment. I mean, are you seeing European demand coming back yet ahead of next year's season? And if not, when would you expect that to come back? Just on.
The European farmers, when they see the prices for the major crops, for the key crops, then they have already reacted. As we said before, they have had quite a good ordering for the autumn application. We are filling now up the stocks for the spring application. So we think that the numbers we give for the coming year are comparable to what we had before the crisis, so let's say in fertilizer year 2007-2008. And we think that the application of potash will come back to normal standard application. And when you listen to what Norbert says in the beginning, we talk about coming from saving mode to normal fertilization again, because now yield is the most important issue, at least for the months to come or for the season to come, and it's not saving on fertilizers. That's our reasoning behind the numbers.
Great, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Tony Jones from Redburn. Please go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. I've just got one left, actually. On potash, you've indicated mine output next year will be a fraction over 7 million tonnes, but can you indicate your expected closing inventory, if you've got a feel for it, so I can add that figure back onto next year's total output, please? Because that will make a difference, clearly, in this circumstance.
Tony, the question will be a little bit the weather in the harbour in Hamburg, for example. But we estimate that, I would say 650,000 tons. So it's on the low side, depending a little bit on product mix and whether one or two vessels will go. You see, one vessel to Brazil is 40,000 tons. And if you talk about a total stock of the whole product range of 650, that makes immediately quite a lot. So, but it will be on the lower side. It will be quite low when you see what distribution might ask in the fourth quarter.
But if I, Norbert Steiner speaking, might add one remark. We will, of course, at the end of 2011 also will have some inventories for the year 2012. Yeah, that means that if we assume the demand in 2011 to come in a way like we have forecasted it and we hope it will be, then it will be also something that will be necessary to have in that area of 650,000 tons available for the springtime 2012. So that I cannot swear that we will not go down from 650 to 500 and then go up to 700 or something again. So it will be almost neutral.
Okay, but just so I'm clear then, you could have a circumstance, and I don't know whether this is contractual or whatever, but you could have a circumstance where you could add on 200, 300, maybe even 400,000 tons onto your total forecast output. It is possible.
Clearly, potentially, theoretically, yes, but
unlikely.
Practically, no.
Okay, that's clear. I just wanted to clear that up, but thanks anyway.
Okay, thanks, Tony.
Okay, thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Andrew Stott from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
So, good afternoon. I had two questions. Firstly, can I start with the dividend policy? So you've reiterated that your payout ratio, in effect, in the press release. Does that include the accrual for the mining obligations? I mean, given that's non-cash, as you've been keen to point out, do we calculate the dividend ex that, or do we include that? Secondly, I'm just wondering where you are now with your thinking on brownfield or greenfield expansion, given how strong the balance sheet is going to be by the end of this year, What are your thoughts on the use of cash as well? Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Norbert Steiner speaking. Question number one to the future dividend policy. There is one article in all of our financial reports which is unchanged since years, and this time on page number 23. 40 to 50% of the adjusted group earnings forms the basis of the dividend calculation and discussion with the supervisory board. And this is more or less the basis where we come to that 195 to 2, what was it, 205 or 210. And this will be the basis for that. That will might be the dividend for 2010 and 2011.
No further adjustments.
So there's no adjusted number?
Yeah, if you want.
Okay, no, that's clear. Thank you.
No, and the second question is a classical one, of course. We are still working on several options to increase our capacity in potash, which are not mature so far that we can talk about that. But we are working on that, and of course we are dedicated to do something. And if it might be materializing in 2011, we might have the necessity to take that liquidity and the cash that we have in order to start with that, with the acquisition of a license and so on and so forth. So from this perspective of 2000, of the 11th of November, we would try to reserve the liquidity and the ability to do that, and then the rest will come.
Okay, thank you.
Hmm? Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Peter Clark from SocGen. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. It's a quick question on the free cash flow guidance, which seems to infer there could be an outflow in the final quarter. Obviously, I know the CapEx is meant to go up significantly. Just wondering if there's any other major movements within there, perhaps working capital or something. And then following on from that, the guidance for salt. Obviously, I can understand that Europe is going to have a stunning year in 2010, given the beginning of the year and obviously what's happening through the third quarter into the fourth quarter. But North America has been a lot less strong. And just wondering, you know, in terms of the North American business, how you feel that might be on a normalized basis if we went into 2011. Thank you.
First, I'll start with the latter question, Peter. And with view to the salt, we always, like since decades, are normalizing the outlook with view to the volumes that we sell, particularly in the icing salt, into that 10 years average that we utilize for that. So, as we had indeed a very excellent year, assuming that the fourth quarter will be at least normal in 2010, it was a normal development that we needed to go down by 1 million ton overall. And we do not have to add something to our guidance that we publicly are working on, that we will have 175 to 190 million euro EBIT contribution in the salt business. So there is nothing to be added.
Okay.
And concerning your first question regarding free cash flow, no, there is no foreseeable special effects in the fourth quarter. But remember, of course, that our investment activities in the first three quarters was only 100 million, and we forecast 200 million for the whole year. So obviously, there will come a big chunk in the fourth quarter. But apart,
it's just the CapEx then is the big difference.
Yes.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Annette Weber from EHF Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I've got a couple of questions. The first one is probably an easy one. The depreciation in salt declined in Q3 versus the previous quarters. Is there anything specific behind that? And what do we have to model in our spreadsheets going forward? The second question relates to the production costs in potash. Are you expecting them in Q4 to exceed the prior year level? given all the comments you made on the general development in the cost base. And the third question relates to the adjustment in your production capacity that you have guided to for 2011 and 2012. What if average selling prices in the potash market generally were to rise again significantly beyond the levels we are seeing right now? Would you bring back this capacity, or would this be gone forever?
I start with the easy question on the salt. This was the mere effect of the change of the exchange rate. And to come to the third question before Joachim starts, jumps in to get the second one, first of all, to correct you, if I may, we have given the guidance for 2011, and of course we are trying to get back to normalized, to higher capacity utilization degrees in the years afterwards. These cuts that we have indicated in France and in Germany will most likely be eternal ones. That means that we are, from the perspective of today, not expecting to have, for example, Thomas Kali on board in the future anymore.
So your, just to clarify again, your production capacity would still be
three
how much in 2012?
Less.
Yeah, okay.
7.5 as the indication.
In 2012?
No, Annette. This
no,
is
no, just 2011.
I just want to clarify now. I hope this is clear now. We said that we will come down in the midterm to 7.5 for the reasons Mr. Steiner described. But we have now for the, I think for the, at least for the years where we have this environmental program, we just have structural reasons why we cannot reach the 7.5 million.
Yeah.
And that's the reason which is starting already in 2011.
Yeah, because of the, yeah, exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, Annette, and the third one, the last question was, or the second question was actually, how do, will the cost develop?
Mm-hmm.
We will see in the fourth quarter, I think we will see a slight increase in freight costs. All the other elements, I think, are rather stable. But freight costs are picking up, I think, on a worldwide basis.
Mm-hmm. So that will drive up your cost base?
Yeah, that will drive it up, but it's not...
Year on year?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Thomas Svoboda from MainFirst Bank. Please go ahead.
Thomas Svoboda from MainFirst. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have three questions, two on potash and one on salt. Firstly, coming back to your production costs, I would be actually happy if you could give us kind of a guidance in the long term, or at least beyond 2011, where you have some one-off effects apparently, where this production cost could go to. You had exceptionally high production costs in 2009. I think it's around 270 euros per ton. We are coming back to 200 euros per ton in 2010, roughly. But before the crisis, at full capacity utilization, you were at 155. So given the changes in your cost structure, could you just give us a hint towards what number we should be looking in the mid to long term? That's the first question. The second question is on the global capacity. If I understand you correctly, you seeing that not only you are having problems to build up the necessary workforce to maximize your production, and other producers could also have that problem. That would actually mean that the global capacity next year might be lower than the nameplate capacity we're looking for. Do you have any rough guess for us what the global capacity next year could be? And the third question is on salt. And here I was just looking into the margins of molten salt and the margins you had at ESCO in the past, and it looks like that molten salt was always a little bit more profitable. You have seen the good slightly higher prices from in salt in Europe this year. Do you have the feeling that the profitability in Europe might have increased for longer, or is this just temporary due to the supply bottlenecks we saw in the first half of this year? Thank you.
Okay, this is Christian speaking. I start with your first question, Thomas, with regard to production costs going forward. You are totally right. If we do the unit cost in 2009, we certainly saw a peak coming down now in 2010, mainly on the basis of higher output. In the capital market, I think a number of approximately 200 euro is used as an average for the full year 2010. So don't punish me if we come out with 210 or 190, so roughly 200. And given the new volume outlook for next year, which will be slightly beyond 7 million, you see that the volume increase is moderate. That means we do not have so much capability to lower the unit cost, even if everything stood stable. And we see that on some cost items, we certainly have to calculate with we see a moderate increase. So I think it was mentioned that we have to hire more people. That is certainly more people means more expenses. But certainly we also have higher tariffs. The latest tariff agreement was roughly 3.5% in addition. So this is certainly adding up to cost. We, I think, see also an average transportation price next year being higher than in 2010. So that means that the unit cost next year compared to this year, I think, will be more or less in a stable development. Yeah, and honestly, Thomas, I don't dare to give you now an outlook for 2012.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So the second and the third question will be answered by me, Norbert Steiner. Of course, we do not have a clear insight in the ability of our competitors to use their theoretical or nameplate capacity, not in this year and also not in the forecast for 2011. But when you look to developments in some areas in the world, you can only come to the conclusion that there was not an artificial withholding of capacities, but an inability to satisfy the demands that were coming in. And therefore, we say there seems to be practically a certain restriction for the utilization of the capacity, since there are maybe not enough workers skilled in order to do the necessary things to cope with the demand. And this relates us to the expectation that we have tabled of 55 to 60 million tons, knowing that the capacity, and this is something which we show on our slide number 8 here, which is a classical slide that you find always in our presentations, that we have higher capacity installed than we expect it will be utilized the next year or the next years to come. But again, this is only a calculation or a result out of our view on the behavior of our competitors in the international markets. There can only be this as the result out of that. In the salt, the third question, you should not forget that the volatility in the salt business, primarily in the past in Europe, has been very high, that we have seen more or less 100% more or less EBIT contribution out of our ESCO operations in the past. And this influences a lot the margins of the business. That means that you today are comparing margins in Europe in ESCO on the basis of an excellent start into the year 2010. And you should more or less also be a little bit aware that we should also normalize that. This is the main reason for one of the main reasons for our acquisition of Morton Salt, to reduce volatility in all the regions having higher, let's say, likelihood in more regions of the icing salt, and having a better balanced portfolio with higher margins and higher stability, like in table salt and in industrial salt area. So please do not make the mistake to trace from one exceptional year, 2010, in ESCO's business to the past. And therefore, I would like to repeat as final remark to that, 175 to 190 should be the persistent EBIT contribution out of the salt business, irrespective from where it comes.
That's clear. Thank you. Maybe if I just can sneak in a follow up on the on the volume guidance on potash. Did I understood you correctly that the upper end of your volume guidance of 60 million tons somehow also already includes the availability of the product next year? Is this what you tried to say?
I think, Thomas, we have to make clear that 60 million is demand, and the capacity that we show in this graph is right now higher, but as Steiner said, this depends on the availability of product. So the 60 million is our demand scenario, 55 to 60 million, that's the demand scenario. And the question will then be, is the market capable of, having this 60 million, if we are now optimistic, is this 60 million available in the market next year? That's what we are having to see. Yeah. By the way, I see that we have three people now still waiting for further questions. We are already beyond 1 hour, and in order not to make it too painful for all the listeners, I would love to conclude the call after the next three questions. Is that possible? I hope so. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Your next of those three comes from Gunnar Kohus from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, Gunnar, we can hear you.
Okay, it was my name. I didn't clearly understand it. Gunnar Kohus, Berenberg Bank. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I keep it short. There's basically one question left, and it's referring again to potash. We haven't really talked about the trade. How is the situation of the trade? Certainly in anticipation of higher prices, they have taken positions. Do you know to what extent? And also it is said that some producers have put a stop to any quotes for loading in January. Do you have the same situation? Do you already discuss prices for January, or you rather wait how the situation develops?
Hello, Don.
Hi.
Talking to trade, so I think we are waiting. In Europe, at least, we are waiting. We just announced a price increase. We know their order books. We know their stock position. So we are waiting in Europe. And I think also in the first quarter, we will have to look how overseas markets really grip those price indications we have now. And I think in the end, it has to do a lot with what will be the result in China. Because if China will have a very strong demand, and we have a little bit of black box there, as you know, China always has a little bit of black box. When they come early, when they have a big demand, I think then this will give a further pricing potential and a push to everybody else. What we also see is that in some, let's say, South Asian countries and some clients in Brazil who have been very reluctant to talk prices, that they are much more open now. They feel that some producers have a low stock position and that something is moving in this area. But I cannot see it's over the whole country portfolio and whole client portfolio, but isolated cases where those guys perhaps who have been a little bit late ordering have not had thought that they can go more into just-in-time planning. Those guys get a little bit nervous, and now they are much more, I should say, open to discuss prices.
Okay, thank you. If you compare the behavior of the trade maybe with pre-crisis times in terms of ordering, do they order now more, or is it back to kind of to normal levels, or you see they're still reluctant?
What they do now, they are more reasonable. At that time, they were just ordering quantity, quantity, quantity. Now what they do, partly they try to have back-to-back businesses. They are much more, how should I say, carefully taking decisions. That's why it's not as hectic as it was in 2009. It's normal now. It's normal.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We now have a follow-up question from the line of Jean Rosseville. Please go ahead.
Yes, the main question I wanted to ask has just been asked, but just two very small other ones, very simple, hopefully. On cost, you basically said costs are going to be flat, but you're talking about higher number of employees, volumes not really much growing, and freight costs going up. So what's going down? And second question on salt. Obviously, you had nice price increases in Europe for de-icing. Should we assume that the higher prices will stick for all the winter, or there's they could change during the winter? Thank you.
Okay, first question, first answer, Jean, to your question. You're right. In absolute terms, costs go up, But I said that our volume guidance is also increasing compared to the achieved or the expected achieved level this year. And this is, I was talking about flat unit cost, not about flat absolute cost. Absolutely, cost will rise, no doubt.
And to turn to the second question in the salt business, you know that we have in Europe and in America, North America, Canada, more or less exactly the same kind of bidding processes where you have, first of all, to bid, and if you win the bid, you have the obligation to deliver a certain volume to your client that is being sufficient, and where the volumes this year have been certainly and significantly higher than the years before. The second part of that contract is that you have to ship and deliver to the demand and to the orders of your client a certain additional volume to the same price that you have achieved in the bidding. Only in case that his demand exceeds this both parts of the volume, you are free and you can charge other prices, which generally are in a situation of scarcity higher than the prices that you have under contract. But as nobody knows whether you can deliver the second part or even more than the second part, we cannot make some prognosis for the price development afterwards.
And all the bidding occurred already, so you have good visibility for winter.
I would not swear that everyone has been finalized, but 95% minimum has been done.
Right. Okay. Very clear. Thank you very much.
Jean, there's also one... certainly one reason why the average price we would then show in Q4 and Q1 can differ, because it depends certainly where we sell our product.
Of course.
By region.
Yeah, okay. Of course. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. And your final question for today comes from the line of Stefan Kipe from Commerzbank. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Interesting name I have there. Just
others, if I remember the first one.
I'm actually my new colleague, obviously. Just one question with regards to Greenfield project, a more basic question. I remember years ago when we talked about the possibility of Greenfield project, and there was always this big opportunity of a cooperation with Russian players. Standing in the room, what we have seen in recent months is a concentration of Russian suppliers. It talks about a merger or increased cooperation there. And secondly, one other Russian player who has a stake in K&S also obviously going it alone in their Greenfield project. Do you see through this development that this has maybe limited your options for greenfield growth in the long term in potash, or doesn't this have an influence there?
When you especially talk about the Russians, I mean, there's another Russian partner heavily looking for partnering. It's, for example, Aquan. They also have a license at Ural, and they are looking for a partner, but they are not finding any. What you are definitely where you are right is that, for the time being, I think it's no use to try to talk to Silvinit or to Ural Kali. I think they are very busy with themselves. And Eurochem has made a very clear statement. They would like to develop what they have, the licenses they have by themselves.
Of course, let me add one or two sentences, Norbert Steiner speaking. There is an option less, but we have never based our ideas on just one. So if you say there is one less, yes, it limits us, but it was not the only one, and there are other options around the world. And therefore, we are continuing to work on this very hard.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I think... Christian Herrmann has cut all additional questions back. Thank you for that, or thank him for that. No, I think everything has been made quite clear during that conference call, and I would like to thank you at the end of that for your participation on our conference call on the Q3 results. I hope you can understand that we are happy about the figures that we have been able to present. Just a year after the terrible 2009, the dynamic and magnitude of the current recovery is remarkable. Against the backdrop of high agricultural commodity prices and a normalized demand for farmers, the market environment for 2011, and I think we have discussed this extensively, should even sustain a further increase in our operating earnings. Our next publication date is on the 10th of March 2011, and I would thus already like to invite you to our press and analyst conferences in Frankfurt at that date. Until then, there will be several conferences and our Capital Markets Day we are going to attend and to offer, and we hope to see some of you there. Thank you and goodbye for today. Bye-bye.